36 packs of Shiner, 99 cent butane lighter, Lucky Strikes and a fifth of Patron. Ice down that igloo cooler, tank of gas that ought to do her. I can feel a good one coming on. Throw in Ray Wiley Hubbard, sing along to Redneck Mother. Any blues I had before are gone. Another working week is over, no chance of staying sober.
Hello everyone and welcome back to the Master Review Podcast. My name is Cole, and I'm here with no other than the heart and soul of thenationalsreview.com, Charlie Flegel.
Mr. Colm, how are you? Feels like it's been a while.
It has been a while. Let's just say I was adjusting to a new job and realized that I'm old and needed to get sleep every night. But I mean, things went on, and maybe things happen for a reason, because I saw incredible baseball being played and seeing, really, like, feeling like I know the team now, I have to say. Like, it's in and out.
Yeah, I mean, they're sort of playing. It's interesting because in May, they were awesome, and they were hitting the cover off the ball.
Right.
And the last few weeks, they've been awesome, and they've been pitching so great. And
so good.
We'll get to that, but it's like, they weren't hitting great the last couple of weeks, but they've been winning. So
right.
I'll take it any way it comes.
I just think that we're watching a historic pitching staff right now that is a pleasure as a fan to watch such amazing pitching going on. And it's like, I haven't felt this way about pitching staff since that Atlanta teams of the 90s, early 90s.
Wow. That's big praise.
It's big praise.
Well, Cole, do you have a drink?
I do have a drink. That's funny you ask. I went to the store tonight because I finished my case of Corona and decided, okay, what should I get? And it just came back to Mike's Hard Lemonade.
I love the Mike's Hard Lemonade.
Cold, hard, refreshing.
I have something that I may have had before on the show, but this is not from the same six-pack. It's a Victory Prima Pils. It's a Pilsner,
yes.
And Victory is a good brewery based out of Philly.
Wow.
And I'm enjoying it. It is ice cold, and it is hot outside, and it's beer, so I'm happy.
Well, shout out to Seven Locks Brewing, that I saw they laid cement down on their factory, and hopefully we'll be drinking that soon.
We got to do a show from there.
I think it's almost, we have to, yeah.
That would be the way to do it.
Yeah.
Just do a show from there.
Mm-hmm.
So, Colm, let's talk a little bit about what we've seen with this team in just the last week. Because you were on vacation.
I was.
So you got to basically put your feet up, have a beer, and watch every single game.
Like, it's almost like FP was sitting right next to me for every night of my life. It was great.
So every night was he telling you, now, kids, this is what you do in this situation.
Yeah. No, I really enjoy him now after he was basically part of my night almost, I guess, six of the seven nights.
There are a lot of people who hate FP. And
yeah.
He's a homer, but I think he's fun and he's listenable.
Right.
And he's not the best color guy, but he's far from the worst.
And I think Bob Carpenter might be one of the best play-by-plays.
I'm not so sure about that.
Really? I enjoy Bob Carpenter a lot. See you later.
So Carpenter is, again, one of those people that, like, I don't think he's terrible. I just think he's not great. And when they are doing bad, they get so whiny. You know who I was watching?
He's not the same Bob Carpenter that used to pitch, is he?
No.
Okay.
You know who I was listening to yesterday? I was watching, was it the Yankees-Angels game? And Ken Singleton is the old Orioles player. Ken Singleton is like, he was the color guy for a while, but now he's one of the play-by-play guys for YES. He is so good.
Is he really?
He's awesome, and he's an ex-player. And he's just like, I like him.
Yeah, you don't see a lot of player play-by-plays. They're always color.
Yeah, usually the players are color guys, but. Yeah. But yeah, so you and FP have been hanging out every night.
Every night.
And you saw. Well, let's start. We go back to Scherzer throwing almost a perfect game. That was, what was that, two Saturdays ago.
Two Saturdays ago, correct. Yeah, that's how the weekend started, was that game.
That was frustrating, but he did get a no-hitter. And yeah. I think in the history books, people will be like, oh, Scherzer got a no-hitter. And
his first ever.
And all of us are going to be like, that was the almost perfect game that got screwed up.
We'll never forget that.
8 2/3.
Right.
That reminds me of when Mussina was like his first year or second year on the Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a no-hitter through 8 2/3.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah.
And they were facing the Red Sox. And Cliff Floyd, broke it up with like a dinky single
right. Yeah. I remember that.
Oh, I was so angry.
But the Max Scherzer thing, I mean, I wanted to hear your what you thought. Do you think Jose Tejada handled the at-bat correctly? In your opinion. Because I think he did.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a fan of anybody purposefully getting hit by a pitch.
Correct.
And I think the umpire should call it more in general. I always have. I just think, like, the rule is you're supposed to try to get out of the way.
Right.
However, they don't call it, and it's encouraged to try and sort of stick an elbow in the way, right. Stick a knee. So while I'm pissed at him because it screwed up Scherzer's perfect game,
right.
And I would have liked it to be a perfect game,
Same.
I don't really think what he did was outside any sort of, like, unwritten rules of baseball or anything like that. Like, right. If it was blatant, I guess the umpire would have called it.
Right.
It's just something that's not called. And so it's hard to say he did something really wrong. At the same time, you know, I wished ill upon him at the moment.
Right. I did too. But, I mean, he shouldn't have thrown an inside pitch. I mean,
yeah, it was
an inside pitch.
It was definitely an inside pitch. What it wasn't was a pitch that should have hit him.
Right. I agree.
And he got himself in the way, which is annoying.
Correct.
But
he handled it the right. If I were in his position, it would be hard for me because I would be like, oh my God, I don't want to be the guy that messed up this perfect game. But then another part of me is, you know what, F this. I'm trying to make a name for myself on this team. I'm going to do whatever it takes to get
right.
it. Right.
And it's one of those things, like, if somebody bunts for a base hit late in a no-hitter, I know people give people crap for that, but, like, there's no clock in baseball. You can come back. Like, there are opportunities. So,
right.
I think there are a lot of people who would say that's perfectly fine to do something like that.
Right.
Still, I hate him, but, you know.
Right. Jose Tejada. If you're a nat, I'd love him.
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of guy you want somebody doing that on your
right, team. Right. But. All right, but so yeah, that's how it started off. Max Scherzer showed me that that man is having an incredible year already, and he is feeling it. He's in the zone. He knows what he's doing every game, and I have total faith with him now on the mound every time.
He's so good. He's so good. And then he kicked off, right? I think he kicked it off. The week of the Nats basically not giving up. The Nats starting
starters, right?
They went from was it a full week? Did they go?
Yeah, the full week. I went all the way to Sunday. No, they broke it on. Yeah, they broke it on Sunday.
Right, and Scherzer broke it. Now, I don't know if he started it or if it was whoever started before Scherzer, but you went through the rotation at least. One full trip through the rotation without a starter giving up a run. I mean,
right.
That's amazing.
It blew me away because I was like, in every game. Plus, you're seeing Strasburg coming back from injury. A second start.
Yeah, and how good is he look?
And he looked great. And you were just like, wow. You didn't have to worry about Fister. Jordan Zimmerman looked great. Gio looking great. It was unbelievable.
It's one of those things that if this pitching staff gets on a roll, I really do think, like, some of it's cliche,
mm-hmm.
But some of it's not. I really do think they feed off each other.
Yeah.
And
I think it's very special what we have going on here.
If they could get on a roll at the right time, they could really do that in the playoffs. Like, could you imagine if they had that kind of week in the playoffs?
It'd be unbeatable. We would have the trophy if they did that.
The trophy.
Yeah.
We would have it.
We would have it. The other thing is that I also got to see Bryce hit a home run. Then I got to see Bryce get hurt. I got to see Anthony Rendon get hurt. But then these guys come in like Matt Dendecker, and he's hitting home runs. And
how good is Cliff Clint Robinson?
Clint Robinson all of a sudden is playing every day.
He's got like a 350 on base.
Yeah. I'm like amazed with how good we're playing. Ramos is showing that when he's healthy, he's maybe the best catcher in the baseball.
Well, that might be a bit of a stretch. You might be getting a little bit excited, but Ramos does look. I mean, you know, he's not putting up the power numbers that he did back when he first came up, and we were like, oh my God, I can't believe they got this guy for their crappy old closer.
Right.
But because if you remember, they traded
the Chief.
They traded Matt Capps for him.
Oh, Matt Capps. That's right.
But, you know, he's hitting like – his on-base is always going to be a little bit low, but he's hitting like in the 260, 270 range, and he's got slugging – you know, he's got like a 700 OPS, which isn't spectacular, but for a catcher outside of three or four guys that are awesome every year, guys like
– Brian McCann.
Yeah, I mean, like – outside of a handful of guys, like, that's one of the better catchers in the league. It's not the best.
Right.
But it's, like, certainly top 15, probably top 10. That's amazing.
Yeah. No, he's... I just saw me... And then, you know who else I fall in love with is Espinosa. And
he's my favorite player.
And just seeing him play defense is just so amazing. He made that... Do you remember there was one play during that week where they had the huge shift on, I think it was A.J. Perninsky, and out of nowhere, the guy, I think Escobar lunges and tries to get it, and out of nowhere, I think it was during the Max Scherzer game, Espinosa comes out of nowhere and gets the ball and throws it to first and saves the perfect game, like in the seventh inning or something.
Yeah. I mean...
Yeah.
So before I expand upon Espinosa... Is there anything from that week, this amazing week, that you also wanted to talk about? I thought there was something else you wanted to talk about.
Yes. So, yeah, the Max Scherzer was the one thing. There was one game we scored the most runs in the first inning.
That's right. How awesome was that?
It was so incredible. I said to everyone after, so I go, that was probably the best inning of baseball we've ever seen. It was so good.
Yeah, because even this year, that huge comeback game against the Braves, it wasn't more than four runs or maybe five in one inning.
Right.
It was just over a bunch of innings. So, right.
Not only there was another thing, they had a streak going of having 10 plus hits in a game. That was going on.
That's amazing.
And then there was one more thing, wasn't there? Oh, the score of the setting we already talked about.
Yeah.
Through the whole week, I was watching that just go on.
I was getting nervous late in games. I was like, should they take him out? And I'm like, no, you can't take him out early just to preserve the record. But then I was like, whatever, it's the middle of June. Like, preserve the – I want the record.
Right.
Like, take him out in the fifth if you have to. You don't want it to be cheap.
You want
to earn it.
I thought Max stayed in a little long on this past Sunday's game.
Yeah, but you know what?
But his pitch count was low, so I understood it.
Yeah, and he had a lead, and
he looked tired.
He had a tough sixth inning, but he had a lead, and I think with the situation that the game was in, the only reason you would take him out is to preserve the record.
Right.
I think he goes in almost any other time. He goes back in.
Well, I've been,
so they put him back in.
I have a new left-handed crush now. Left-handed pitching coach.
What's that?
Rivero.
He's done well, right? I mean, I haven't paid too much attention to him. But
I really like him. I think right now he's who I like. I like him better than Thornton right now.
So the thing about Thornton is, like, I like Thornton.
Yeah, I do too.
But Thornton has never been a shutdown lefty.
Right.
Guy against lefties, he's just a good, solid reliever.
Right.
So lefties aren't, like, lost against him. So what happens is, like any good solid reliever, and he has another good year, he's got an ERA just under 2.5. Mm-hmm. Lefties can get hits off of him just like righties can. Rivero, I think, is more of one of those guys that righties may have some success against him.
Right.
Lefties
can't hit him.
If I think that's the thought, is that lefties really can't touch him.
Good. That's what we need.
Well, I mean, that's what Blevins gave them last year.
Yeah, correct.
Which was a guy who, unlike Thornton, when you really needed to get a lefty out, you went to Blevins.
Right.
And so maybe by the end of the year, they'll trust that with Rivero. Because what you don't want is to get in a situation in the playoffs where it's late and you have a really good lefty coming up and you just put in a good reliever when what you really need is just one out from a, like a lefty one-out guy.
Right.
So, yeah, Rivero, right. Been doing good. All right, so back to what we were talking about before.
Yes.
Espinoza, you know, in my opinion, best infielder on the team,
yep.
Hitting well. I think I basically checked this stat like every other day, but I think he's got like of all middle infielders in baseball, he's got like the fourth or fifth highest OPS.
Oh, good.
So he could play shortstop, and then you have Rendon just went on the DL, but.
Yeah.
Assuming he comes back healthy, and this is more of a we want to rest him now so he's not hurt later kind of thing. And then Escobar's playing great. Do you think the Nats have any interest in trading Desmond?
Oh, my gosh. I hope they do.
You do?
I really do.
So you think that even with the Rendon injury, it's time to,
time
to part ways?
Well, Espinoza should be our everyday shortstop, in my opinion.
Well, that I agree with because he's the best – he's the best infielder on the team.
Yeah, and you never have to worry about a ball being hit in the infield again.
So what would your infield be?
With everyone healthy?
Well, yeah, with everyone healthy, okay. I think you have to leave Escobar at third because he's, quote-unquote, uncomfortable at second.
Second, right.
But let's say Rendon's still out.
Okay.
What do you do? You play
Ugla.
Ugla at second?
Yes. I think Ugla, if he gets to play every day, he's going to be a better player. Like, and
what about like Wilmer Defoe or Trey Turner?
I just think it's too early for Trey Turner, right? I mean,
maybe, yeah, maybe.
I don't know. You could bring him up and let him have a couple of swings and see what happens.
I think it's probably a little too early. I'm guessing they don't want him to come up until September, but you never know. But the fact that they have Defoe's. I think he's slumping a little bit in the minors, so he's not hitting the way he was before he got promoted to, like, I think he's in AAA now. He was killing AA. But between him and Turner, if Rizzo's confident that one of them could fill in if somebody gets hurt, because I'm not confident, and I'm not sure that they are, that Ugla could be a full-timer, right?
Really?
He's not a good fielder.
No.
He's a bad fielder.
Yeah.
But on top of that, like, he's a power bat that's good off the bench because he can hit a couple home runs. He can hit some doubles. But, like, I don't think they want to see him get 300 more at-bats this year. I don't think they want him to be the full-time second baseman if somebody gets
hurt. Can Michael Turner or Michael Taylor?
Michael Taylor plays.
Can he play second base? Because I would be all for that.
Probably not.
He is my favorite player on the team, by the way, now.
Well, my daughter has his autograph now, so.
I mean, just when Worth comes back, I mean, it's and Denard's back, it's over. That's
you
what
know,
sucks.
Remind me about him in a minute because I have another question for you. But back to the middle infield stuff.
Yes.
I actually took a look at some teams that are contending that could actually use a shortstop.
Who are they?
I so would love to hear that. I'll go from, like, in my opinion, sort of least likely to most.
Okay.
The least likely, I think, is the Angels.
Yeah, I
found
that.
Four teams that were contenders and could use a shortstop.
Right.
And I ranked the Angels fourth because they have Eric Ibar, and he's getting paid a lot of money, and he has another year.
Right.
But his OPS is lower than Desmond's.
Wow, like, he must be doing terrible.
Well, he's got a little bit of a higher on base. but he has just no power anymore.
So he doesn't swing at the first pitch every time.
Right. Okay. And, you know, what do the Nats need? Well, I looked at bullpen help. Yes. So I guess the question would be, do you still think they need bullpen help with what's happened recently with Rivera looking good, with David Carpenter, with Jansen back? I mean, should they be – if they were to trade Desmond, would you want them to trade him for bullpen help, or would you want them to trade him for a prospect? With the assumption being that you're not going to get like a top five prospect, but you're going to get a prospect that Mike Rizzo likes. So therefore,
correct. Yeah.
Therefore, you're going to trust it's going to
be. I would roll the dice with that. Yeah, totally.
So you'd be willing to give up Desmond for a prospect?
Yeah, because I don't think – I think we're – the guy is going to demand money regardless. He's not going to be here.
Oh, so I have trouble seeing him here next year too.
Yeah, so it's like why not use him to get something for him instead of him just going and we get nothing?
Fair enough. And if
there you go,
they may not even give him, they may not even get the draft pick for him because they may not want to give him a qualifying offer.
True.
He may take it.
True. That's very true.
He has a really bad year. He may be like, yeah, I'll take $15 million for 1 year and try and prove it again so I can go get more money next year.
Right.
And they may just be like, look, that's not a bad deal for him, but we don't want to deal with him anymore. Right. We don't want him to be on the team anymore.
Right.
All right. So in my number three team, the Cubs. Because
wow, that is very
in the NL Central race, and yeah. Starlin Castro has been awful. Not quite as bad as Desmond. A little less power, a little more, you know, average. But
are they really like not happy with him anymore?
They hate him, and I'm not sure why. But he's like really unpopular with the man. You know, like there's.
Rizzo is having an incredible. That kid is amazing.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of hitters on that team. But I wonder if you could even do some sort of Cubs, like Desmond for Castro type thing.
Right.
Castro's got more time and he's got more sort of prospect pedigree, so you'd probably have to give up more. But
wow, that would be interesting if we could get him.
Castro still has this upside that you can see.
Yeah.
Well, Desmond, you could see him getting in a hot streak and hitting 10 home runs in the second half.
Yeah.
You have to convince somebody that that's going to happen.
Right.
Castro, you know, it could be like a change in environment thing for both of them. But,
right. Interesting.
It seems like a reach to me. I may even rank that lower than the Angels.
Yeah. I think so. Yeah.
All right. So then next one on the list.
What?
Your New York Yankees.
I think that's a perfect fit.
Didi Gregorius, terrible.
Terrible.
Stephen Drew, terrible. And actually, the funny thing is, the day I wrote an article about this Desmond. So I'm reading off. By the way, this is from Friday. I wrote. It's called Potential Desmond Moves on the website.
Right.
That afternoon, after I wrote that, one of these Yankee sites said that they should look into platooning Didi Gregorius, who's a left-handed hitter.
He's terrible. You know why he's terrible? Because I knew when he was in, I believe he came up in Arizona's farm system. Is that correct? Or was it Colorado?
Yep.
Yeah,
nope. Arizona.
Yeah. I read things about how the coaches didn't like him and that's why they got rid of him.
Hmm. Well, I wonder if he's young enough or old enough to be a
Rizzo. Young. He is young.
Yeah. Kansas City Royals, the last team.
Okay. And
so here's why the Royals. So the Yankees, fine, you know.
Yeah.
There was a year ago people said, oh, the Yankees are such a great fit, but then they got Gregorius and maybe they're not. But, you know, I still think there's opportunity there. But
I do too.
The Royals have not a shortstop issue but a second baseman issue.
Right.
They have Omar Infante as their second baseman, right? Now, yeah, we've heard of him. We know him. He's been playing for
100 years.
Something like that. He is batting. He's got a 553 OPS right now.
It's really interesting.
553.
It's pretty terrible.
Yeah. So, Desmond, better hitter than him.
Probably not a better fielder, though. I can almost guarantee it.
Well, maybe at second base it will be nicer. But the other thing that I like about the Royals is I don't know. It just seems to me like Desmond is a good match for that team. He's like the grinder leader, doesn't walk a lot, swings a lot. I don't know. He's got more power than most guys on the team because they I think they were last or are last in the league in home runs, but they're also last in the league in walks.
Right.
I don't know. He just seems like a fit for that team. And then on top of that, in exchange, they have a completely stacked bullpen, right? So as much as they got sort of crapped on for having a seventh inning man and an eighth inning man and a ninth inning man and not deviating from that, they have that and they have more than that. And I just wonder if there's something that can be done to get a real solid bullpen piece.
And
exchange for Desmond.
I like that team that you suggest because Kansas City is known to have very deep farm systems.
Yeah, I don't know what their farm system's like now or if all the guys have sort of come up.
Yeah, but I remember they just had everyone at one time.
But to me, I'm less enthusiastic about the trade than you are.
Really? You don't think it'll even happen at all?
If I was a betting man, I'd say no. Well, I am a betting man.
Because there's two teams that I'm surprised you didn't mention that I thought he would go to.
Who are they?
The Los Angeles Dodgers.
Yeah, but do they really have a shortstop?
No.
So, I mean...
I mean, sort of. I mean, is Jimmy Rollins playing that great?
Yeah, I guess not. I guess they could use some help.
They could use him. And then, what was the other thing? I wouldn't be surprised if Oakland tries to get him.
Yeah, but Oakland's kind of... So Rollins is having, I'm just looking at his numbers. He's having a terrible year.
Yeah.
Worse than Desmond. So yeah, I mean, maybe that is a possibility. And you never know if they'd be willing to get rid of somebody, whether it's for just trying to get their payroll under $700 million or whatever. Who else? Anybody else? You know,
San Diego?
San Diego and Oakland are out of it to me. Like, so I don't think they're going to make a move like that.
I guess you're
that.
Right. Kansas City is a good fit because that's a team that you know is going to be in the playoffs. 100%.
So now, the question is, I'm not sure that they should do the move unless they get something good. Like, they have to be really happy with the exchange.
Right.
Because for me, it's like the injury to Rendon did make you kind of go, well, it's nice to have him. Now, with the way he's playing, it doesn't matter. It's not nice to have him. But if you do make the assumption that he is going to do better.
I think he will, yeah.
It's not, you know, like, this is a year. Like, if you can get something good in exchange and it helps you win the World Series this year, or it's a prospect that's going to help you. That you think is going to help you win the World Series, fine. Yeah. But there's no reason to get rid of him for the sake of getting rid of him if it lessens your chance of winning a World Series.
True.
This year.
You're saying so you don't think it would be satisfying enough to trade him and get prospects for the future. You would rather something that would help us to get that next level.
Right.
World Series.
I think it really depends on what kind of prospect you can get. If you can get a guy that Rizzo thinks is really going to be a quality major leaguer, then yeah. But it's not one of these things like you should trade him and get a prospect that's going to maybe be okay, maybe not. No. If you can get somebody good, which I have doubts they can get, or you can get real back end of the bullpen help, then maybe it is worth it.
Right.
So I'm not as – after the injury, I'm not as gung-ho about it after the Rendon injury.
Right. That is true. No, it makes it so there's not a problem at all right now. And maybe that's a good thing, you know.
Right. But the other thing that's – good is that the bullpen has been doing much better lately.
True.
And part of the reason for that is...
it's funny you mentioned that. Mr. Ninth Inning Tonight.
David Carpenter.
Yes.
David Carpenter, who, I mean, I guess he... Did he give up a run tonight? I guess he did, but...
No, there was a home run earlier.
It was
Matt Thornton.
But Carpenter hasn't given up a run, has only played, like, 6 or 7 games for the Nats, but hasn't given up a run since the Nats got him. And I actually looked at his, his ERA with the Yankees before they DFA'd him was a 4.82. So you're like, ooh, bad year.
Right.
But I actually looked. He had 18 and two-thirds innings pitched.
That's nothing.
In two of those appearances,
yep, on up.
He gave up 6 runs total in two appearances. Outside of that,
he was amazing.
He was pretty damn good. The majority of his appearances, no runs. He had 5 appearances where he gave up 1 run. But, you know.
He looks great right now. He looks unhittable.
Not a bad pitcher at all. And then I looked at actually some of the pitch effects stuff on Brooks Baseball. And it turns out the biggest difference between the last couple years and this year with the Yankees was the slider wasn't – they basically weren't swinging and missing at his slider.
Interesting.
And so
– so his slider's gotten better.
Yeah. No, they weren't swinging and missing as much this year. So,
oh, they were hitting it.
Right. With the Yankees, his slider actually wasn't working well.
Interesting.
Basically, the guys weren't swinging at it as much. And so what I said when he came over and what he's done better since he's come is that he's basically fooling hitters with the slider again.
Wow.
And I believe FP mentioned this in one of the broadcasts, was that they thought he was throwing his slider too much. And so I'm wondering, this guy throws like 95, 96.
I know, yeah.
So I'm wondering if they were saying, look, you're essentially pitching backwards too much. Your slider should be your strikeout pitch.
Right, exactly.
And I think he's doing that more. His slider rate, or the rate of using it, has gone down since he's come to the Nats, and people are swinging and missing at it more. So
right.
Is it possible they've got a steal a little bit, you know, a late inning guy that look was great with Atlanta
so
for two
good.
Years. Had a sub 2 ERA 1 year, and then the other year his ERA was just above league average. But still, over 2 years, he had, you know, a 2.63 ERA with Atlanta.
Wow.
Like, he looks like a solid piece. So maybe they don't need as much bullpen help as they thought they did.
Right now, it doesn't look like it, especially with the way the starters are getting us later in the games.
But Colm, I just remember like 3 weeks ago,
yeah,
2 weeks ago. I mean, they were struggling. But Casey Jansen has looked good since he's come back.
He has, yeah. I'm happy he's there, too.
Thornton still looks good. Their biggest issue really is Trinan has not been good. He hasn't been terrible.
He hasn't been terrible, though.
But he's been pretty average, and he's been bad in some important situations.
It's true.
So maybe they're just using him too much. I don't know.
I do like hearing about what you're saying about his slider. So they've actually improved him as a pitcher by being like, listen, don't be throwing this all the time so they know what it is. I like that.
Yeah, that seems to be the case. And I wrote about it when they first made the trade.
Wow.
Because I went on Pitch FX and looked at it. So you can look at that. It's just a post-Nats trade for David Carpenter. First I looked at his actual outings, and it looked like besides those two where he got blown up in mid-April and early May, he actually was pretty good for the Yankees. So I'm not sure why they were so quick to DFA him, but...
Interesting.
He gone and the Nats have him.
Yeah, he looks good. He just closed out a game. We have won again.
Excellent.
Is that it?
Yeah, I think that's all we've got, but we have a guest coming.
We have a special guest. You know, it's funny. In this interview, you guys have a little part about Bryce and Miguel Cabrera, and I wanted to talk about how I read an article today that they compared Miguel Cabrera's stats at the same age that Bryce Harper is right now. And it's interesting to see how close they are in some things, how different they are in some ways, but yet, overall, very similar players.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I'll
hopefully
try to find
Bryce,
that for you.
Hopefully Bryce doesn't gain 50 pounds.
Right. Let's hope that doesn't happen.
We're very excited. Apologies. We have Dan Rosenson from Baseball Prospectus. Awesome stuff on Strasburg and Harper. Apologies to Dan for not introing him until now. We didn't talk about him at the beginning of the podcast because we were having some technical difficulties and didn't know if we were going to be able to record with him or not. But everything worked out great. We recorded with him, had a great conversation. So here it is. So here we are with Dan Rosenson. He wrote a great article essentially a month ago today, on Strasburg and his struggles and at BP. So, Dan, you want to give us a little bit about first of all, welcome. You want to give us a little bit about your work with BP and why you're writing for them and what you do around baseball in general?
Sure. Well, it's great, guys. I've been sort of around the circle of BP for a couple of years now. I work very closely with Harry Pavlidis, who's the director of technology for Baseball Prospectus. And we work together for a company called Pitch Info that handles pitch tracking and other data, part of which powers things like Brooks Baseball and Baseball Prospectus. And so I help him a lot with pitch tagging, getting the classifications right. And a couple months ago, I started writing a weekly column for Baseball Prospectus.
Very cool.
Nice.
And you're a D.C. guy, right? Or you're living in D.C. now, correct?
Yes, very close to the stadium, in fact, just a few minutes walking.
Oh, wow, that's nice. An up-and-coming neighborhood.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been really nice. It's nice to just be able to sort of go to a game like on a whim, just nothing else going on. Oh, there's a game in an hour. I'll just buy some tickets.
That's awesome. And we, Colm and I went to the BP event last year, and that's, I met Harry Pavlidis there at the event, and then actually at, I guess, one of your neighborhood bars, what is it called, Blue Jacket, which is a cool place. The brew pub down there. So if you haven't been there, I highly recommend it.
Oh yeah, no, I've been to Blue Jacket. I was actually there just a few days ago with some Pirates fans, or talking to some Pirates fans. But yeah, when Harry was down here, he was staying over in my living room.
Very nice, very nice,
very nice.
Very cool. Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about, so just as by way of introduction, your article ran on May 29th on BP, and it was really about, at that point, Strasburg had like a 6.5 ERA. So it was really about trying to figure out what the heck was going on with him.
Exactly. I mean, we have an expected level of performance for Strasburg. We sort of come to know what he should be putting up. And it was really obvious after 2 months in the season that he wasn't doing that. He didn't look right. There were all these questions about, you know, did he have this nagging ankle injury? He just really didn't seem like himself. So I decided to look. I went back and watched the video of every pitch he threw over the season just to try to see what I could find out. Because there were, you know, some of the stats were saying, well, you know, he'll probably be all right because he's not walking a lot of guys, and, you know, his FIP was pretty reasonable. So I just sort of tried to go in, watch everything, and then see what the data said after that and sort of what I could try to pull out of it.
Wow. So how many pitches did you watch?
It was probably, like a dozen games or something times, maybe an average of 90 pitches. I don't know. It was a lot. I came to really enjoy the fact that on MLB.TV, it allows you to go with the it allows you to select the half inning, and it takes you to the video of when that half inning starts.
Yeah, that makes it go quicker.
Yeah.
So it might be about the 1,000 pitches that Jake from Suspetta's Family Barbecue thinks he's going to throw in a bullpen session after his college career is over.
Oh, he's planning to do that just as a feat of graduation?
As a feat of insanity, I guess.
That's pretty much what they do is insanity. So.
That's right. So tell us, I mean, what did you find in the art, like after looking at all the pitches? What kind of conclusions did you come to?
Well, I remember Matt Williams saying, actually, just a few days before my article ran, that he thought Strasburg's fastball command wasn't that great, and that was one of the things he needed to work on. What I found watching was actually his fastball was his most reliable pitch, and it was getting hit hard because it was the only pitch he could rely on a lot of the time.
Right.
I saw him struggling to command, especially his changeup, which as we know is such an important pitch for him. It was bouncing a lot of them in front of the plate or leaving them way up high, not finding that spot with his changeup and his curveball that helps him get swinging strikes, called strikes, just a whole lot of non-competitive pitches. And so I looked at the data afterwards, and it's true that his changeup and curveball have been much worse, or at least they were before the before he went on the DL. And the reason why he was throwing so many fastballs is because that's all he could rely on, basically.
That's interesting because without looking at the data, I would have almost thought the opposite. I remember actually talking to Harry over Twitter maybe a year ago about his changeup being one of maybe the 5 or 10 best pitches in all of baseball. And I always had sort of a hypothesis that when Strasburg got hit, his off-speed stuff was so good that hitters were essentially going, I can't hit that, so I'm just going to guess fastball on every pitch. And so they either strike out, or when they guess fastball right and they guess location right, since he's not throwing 98 or 99, he's throwing 96, they can sometimes hit it. But it seems like it was the other way around. They were waiting on the fastball instead of guessing fastball because they could see the off-speed stuff was bad and it wasn't going to be in the strike zone. So if it was a strike, they almost knew it was going to be a fastball.
Yeah, I mean, that was the book on him was, yeah, he needs to spot his fastball better. Guys occasionally ambush him. It's funny. I remember when Strasburg first came up in 2010, I think it was Matt Swartz, but I could be wrong, wrote an article saying, will Strasburg be the first pitcher to throw pitches at random? Because when he has all three pitches working, he can throw any of them in any count, and guys are helpless.
Right.
Like you know, his first game against Pittsburgh. But no, what I found is actually, I mean, he was throwing 80% fastball against right-handers with runners on base because he just didn't feel like he could go to anything else. I mean, that's what I'm guessing is the reason why is he didn't feel like he could go to anything else. Mm-hmm. 51% of his changeups from the years 2010 to 2014 were either called strikes or swinging strikes. And in the time before he went on the DL this year, it was 34%. That's a huge drop off.
Yeah, that's massive. That's massive. So.
Yeah, and his curveballs dropped off too, actually. Not by as much, but it was a very noticeable drop.
Well, the changeup is the one that you know, people sort of thought was one of the absolute best pitches in baseball. So to lose your. You know, even though the fastball, he's known for his fastball because he throws it so hard. But to lose, you know, basically an out pitch, a strikeout pitch, and one of the best pitches in baseball is pretty bad. So coming back from the DL, obviously he's been great, in two starts. And what have you noticed that's been doing?
Yeah. Well, I didn't get to watch his last start. I did see his first start back. And in the first inning, I just sort of had a gut feeling saying, all right, things look better. It didn't look like he was laboring. Things looked more natural. And I think the results have borne that out so far. He looks much more comfortable. And I mean, I went back and watched the highlights of his last start against Philadelphia, and you can tell that the secondary stuff was really working. He's getting the swinging strikes. He's getting the changeup in that spot just below the knee where he wants it. And I think, you know, it's obviously pure speculation, but I think he was kind of trying to pitch past an injury. The first couple of months of the season, he just – because, I mean, it was just such an aberration from his usual performance that now that he's had time to rest up and get healthy, I think we're back to seeing the real Strasburg.
Nice. Yeah, and it's interesting you said that about his laboring because I remember watching his first start back and going, forget about the success. It's the most, like, comfortable I've been watching him start because when he labors – it's a really uncomfortable feeling. I don't know. It's just the way he carries himself, the way he's out there. It's like you know things are going to blow up any second. And he just seemed to breeze through both those games. And it was like, wow, he's just dominating hitters. He looked, you know, he looked like Max Scherzer out there. Maybe not similar style.
No, you're
style,
right. In the Baseball Prospectus article, I said it's been distressing to watch. You just know the universe isn't aligned right when he was pitching the way he was the first 2 months of the season.
Yeah. And you don't think the drop in velocity over the last few years is really an issue? Like, his fastball was as fast this year as it was last year, right, when he had a very good year.
I think he's actually – he's crept back up a little bit. He started off the season like a little more than 95, but he was sitting around 96. I went and checked actually earlier today how he's been start by start. And actually I know in his last start he threw his curveball harder than he ever. He was averaging 845 with it. So that must be, you know, Harry and I were kind of wondering, well, maybe he's changed his grip or just trying to throw the heck out of it. But yeah, anyway, I wouldn't worry about his arm speed. His arm speed seems fine. I think at this point, assuming everything is back to where it's supposed to be, then he should probably just try to forget that the first 2 months of the season happened. Whatever he wanted to work on as a pitcher, try to get back to doing that. Because, I mean, I think there's still, you know, a little bit of growth potential left if he can settle down with his mechanics and spot his pitches better. So mentally, you know, the mental game has always been a big thing with him. If he can get past those first 2 months, then I still think there's a lot to look forward to in him.
Yeah, well, he's been amazing, and I think he doesn't get the credit he deserves for being essentially one of the top 15 starters in baseball over, you know, the 12 to 14 time frame. And so maybe it took him having a really hard couple months and then coming back and being himself again for people to recognize just how good he is.
I think that's true, and I think also people need to sort of calm down a bit from what their expectations were in 2010, because think of where the franchise was in 2010,
right,
and what it meant for him to arrive and for, you know, to dominate guys. Whereas now he's in a whole rotation of guys that can get hitters out. So it's okay if he's an A-minus. Like,
right,
we should be happy about that.
No, I mean, it's definitely exciting, and as long as, like you said, it's enjoyable to watch him instead of frustrating to watch him, I'm perfectly happy with him being the number two guy on the rotation, or
yeah,
the number three guy, because it's an impressive rotation, and I think Scherzer has shown that he's, you know, essentially the best pitcher or one of the three or four best pitchers in baseball, so if Strasburg isn't that, that's okay.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Gio Gonzalez is now essentially the number five, and that means a pretty solid rotation all the way through. Yeah, I think it's you know, especially now that Harper is sort of meeting the hype that we always assumed he was eventually going to reach.
Right.
That, you know, let's not worry about Strasburg and Harper. Let's think, you know, a little more optimistically about, all right, what are the little holes that need to be addressed as they try to make a push? Hopefully we won't have to wring our hands too much. You know, get guys like Worth and Zimmerman and Rendon healthy and then push from there.
Exactly. Now, speaking of Harper, you mentioned you wrote an article about Harper and his sort of, I don't know, was it what he needed to do to, or how he sort of emerged as the great hitter that we all thought he could be this year?
Yeah, well, I wrote a BP article on this about maybe 6 weeks ago, and I did a podcast for Baseball Prospectus on it. But basically, Harper has he's always been able to hit a fastball, obviously, because he has insane bat speed and can catch up to any fastball. But this year he's doing a much better job of hitting curveballs and changeups, or breaking balls and changeups, and much better at covering the outer half of the plate. You used to be able to kind of, especially if it was a left-handed pitcher, you could kind of get him with soft stuff away and he'd be out in front. He wasn't able to pick it up. He'd be flailing at it. And now he's hitting that as well as anything on the inside half of the plate. So guys are sort of going to have to go back to the drawing board and figure out, because when you get somebody like that who can cover all pitch types, all areas of the zone, that's when you get a really high batting average and a really high on base percentage and a really high slugging percentage like we see from him.
Right.
That's the kind of stuff Miguel Cabrera can do.
And he's one of the few guys like Cabrera who has sort of the strength to go the other way and still hit it out of the park. So And I think he actually enjoys it. I mean, I remember when he first came up talking about, like, opposite field home runs is something he actually likes to do. So you love that kind of attitude in a young power hitter that, I don't have to pull everything. I want to go the other way with it if that's where the ball needs to go.
Absolutely. In fact, there's a video on YouTube of him when he was still, like, 16 at some showcase in Tropicana Field where they got, like, a bunch of the top high school players to do sort of a mock home run derby. And he was swinging a metal bat, but he had a 500-foot home run in that showcase. and he was the only one of the group there to hit an opposite field home run.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Wow.
He is – I mean, there's no – I can just describe – he's just a joy to watch play.
Yeah.
There's really no other way to describe it. He's so fun to watch.
Yeah, and he was the one who showed up for the division series. That was
That's
really
right.
satisfying for me is – that's one less thing people can try to knock him about.
Yeah, people can't say he's, whatever they want to say, not clutch or whatever sort of ridiculous thing they want to say. He was doing everything. So hopefully when they, hopefully make the playoffs this year, he won't be the only one to show up. But we have a feeling that he will, at least he'll show up, if not anybody else.
That's right.
Yeah, no, I think obviously they're built to do they're built to go a long way. Still a lot of baseball left to play. Seeing Strasburg back healthy and pitching the way he's supposed to is one of those big question marks that now you can just try to put out of your mind.
Excellent. Well, Dan, I really appreciate you coming on the show and talking Strasburg and Harper. And since you're a DC guy and a Nats fan, we know to check out Baseball Prospectus for some more Nats stuff, right?
Absolutely, yes. I'll be working on the Nats for next year's BP annual, so I'll have to study up on some of the minor league guys too. But yeah, I'll be watching.
Great.
Very good. Well, thanks so much for the time. And where everybody can find your stuff on Baseball Prospectus. Where can they find you? Can they find you on Twitter?
Yes, my handle is SixToolPlayer. Yeah, really glad that I could join you guys.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much. Thanks so much for the time. We really appreciate it. And hopefully we'll get to talk to you again soon.
Okay, cool. Talk to you later.
And that's going to do it for us. You're getting a truncated ending this time. Coleman and I recorded our normal ending last night, but of course, for some reason, it didn't work. So I'm just going to say thanks again to Dan Rosenson for joining us. That was an awesome conversation. Really appreciate it. And follow Colm at Colmination. Follow me at Nationals Review. Please go visit the website, thenationalsreview.com. Check out everything there. If you're listening to this on the website, please go subscribe on iTunes. Download the podcast on iTunes. And we will see you at the park. I can feel a good one coming on. Throwing Ray Wiley Hubbard. Sang along to Redneck Mother. Any blues I had before are gone. Another working week is over. No chance of staying sober. I can feel a good one coming on. Yeah, we're gonna roll all night. We're gonna get the feeling right. We're gonna keep this party rocking till the break of dawn. Yeah, I can feel a good one coming on. Three blondes in a ragtop Mustang followed us down to the lake and didn't have to think about that too long. Skinny dipping in the bright moonlight. Situation couldn't be more right. I can feel a good one coming on. Yeah, we're gonna roll all night. We're gonna get the feeling right. We're gonna keep this party rocking till the break of dawn. Yeah, I can feel a good one. Feel like a good one.
I can feel a good one coming on. Till it break the dawn. We gonna roll all night. We gonna get the feeling right. We gonna keep this party rocking till the break of dawn. Yeah, I can feel a good one. Yeah, feel like a good one. I can feel a good one coming on.